Eurovision. Welcome to Eurovision, a podcast with a unique Irish perspective on the Eurovision Song Contest.
12 points,
Ireland.
All kinds of everything reminds me of you.
What's another year for someone who's lost everything that he owns? Hold me now, don't cry, don't say your word, just cry.
I look at you and I get to feel it burning. In your eyes, I see the light leading me home again.
We were the rock and roll kids, rock and roll.
Tina, August Fulcher, a rash to the Eurovision podcast. Today you are tuning in for a really, really big, explosive episode. Connor and I are joined once again by the Irish head of delegation in Eurovision and an RTE executive producer and director, Michael Keeley. Yes, he is back. Guess who's back?
Back again.
Yeah, this is a big episode. It was a really interesting and insightful one to record. We do want to thank Michael again. We do thank him later on. We just want to thank him again for, you know, being generous with his time and his energy and for making the effort to meet with us and, yeah, talk through this episode. We also would really like to thank Dan and all of the team at the podcast studios in Dublin City Centre for helping us to make the recording of this episode possible. And we do also really want to thank anyone who has supported us on Buy Me a Coffee, because your contributions and your support actually enabled us to make use of that studio for these kinds of important episodes. We had one with Niamh Kavanagh in there recently, and we've now had a follow-up one with Michael Keeley. So thank you again to everyone for supporting us on Buy Me a Coffee. Connor, a lot coming up, right?
It's a big episode, and it's last year probably one of our most popular episodes. A lot of people discovered us through that episode as well, so it'd be interesting now to see the follow-up and see what's changed and what's coming up this year. And yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I think it would be good. Also as well, worth noting, if you want to watch the interview, you can head over to our YouTube channel, Eurovision Podcast, and watch it over there as well, if you wish.
Can we also just note, I know you mentioned there, Connor, about last year's episode, and I think a lot of us found it very interesting and insightful. We would really recommend that you go back and listen to that episode if you haven't heard it yet, because it's kind of like a good prequel to today's episode. Yes. You might, if you haven't heard our last one, you might say, why didn't they ask him this and why didn't they ask him that? There's a high chance we probably asked him last December when we released that episode. So do go back and listen to that one if you haven't yet and you're interested. This is a good follow-up. We dig a good bit deeper, I think, in today's episode.
Definitely. And a lot more kind of the year in review, kind of taking it from Eurosong, where we last kind of spoke to him, really where we left things off, and carrying on through to Eurovision, to May, and now the post Eurovision season and what's going on behind the scenes in the lead up to the 2024 season and beyond. But yeah, it's really, really interesting. But definitely, like Lou said, head back and listen to our previous episode if you want to kind of hear the introductory bit to this.
The starter pack.
Yeah.
But just to get your taste buds flowing and to get your ears interested in what is to come, here is a small taster of some of the things to be expected in today's episode. Storm at the time about the comments made on RT Radio 1 from the lead singer John Lydon when he was asked, does he watch Eurovision? He said, no, never. It's absolutely awful. The songs, the whole thing of it is disgusting, really, to me. I'm a songwriter. I perform live. And these shows, they just come off dreadfully phony to me.
His whole persona is based on a kind of contrariness. Would Connolly have done better? Possibly. Are we any closer? I'm not sure. I thought we were closer until, you know, shit happened over the summer.
Another non-qualification, 12th in the semi-final, 10 points, one qualification in 10 years.
You make it sound very bad.
Well, Michael, would say it is very bad. Bad.
It is bad.
And that is all to come in the next hour and 10 minutes.
Do take some breathers, guys.
Yeah, it is pretty intense.
Take some breaks.
So get yourself a nice cup of tea, nice cup of coffee, maybe something stronger if you need it. Relax, sit down, and I guess enjoy. Right, everyone, we are back in the podcast studios here in Dublin City Centre. We are joined by the boss himself, Michael Keely, executive producer, nice. And of course, the Irish head of delegation for Ireland at Eurovision. Michael, welcome back to the podcast. It's great to speak with you again.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting me back. The boss makes me sound a bit like it's kind of a mafia term, you know what I mean? It has that, those sort of Sicilian connotations, you know?
Oh God, no, no, not at all. But you have been in charge.
I'm a facilitator. I'm not a boss, really.
Well, last year we had you on the podcast, and I think a lot of fans thought that interview was very insightful, very honest as well, a great insight into the kind of inner workings of Eurovision within RTE. So we appreciate your honesty back then as well. And yeah, we're kind of going to kick it off from where we left off, really, Eurosong 2023, and forge away to where we are today. Really, what were your thoughts on last year's competition and the six acts that we had?
Seems like a long time ago now, to be honest. And a lot has happened in the meantime. Not just, you know, a Eurovision in Liverpool, but lots of other stuff has been going on in my own place of employment and various different things. So it feels like a long time ago. It feels like a couple of years ago, actually, to be perfectly honest. But casting my mind back, I thought, do you know what? I thought we had a good mix of songs, despite what some people might have thought, you know, and everyone's entitled to their opinion. And I think that, you know, that it was a tough choice. You know, I thought there was any number of those six could have gone to Liverpool and could have done all right for us. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, it was Wild Youth, as you know, and well, we all know what happened after that. So, you know, look, it's moot, but I mean, would Connolly have done better? Possibly. We'll never know, you know. But I would be hopeful that she would certainly have a go again at some point in the future, because I thought one of the great things about a Eurosong like that was that it discovered, well, you know, not that anybody discovers Connolly, but, you know, she decided to enter the competition, and she decided to give it a go, and it brought her to the attention of a lot of people, and that can only be a good thing, you know.
And she was charting and everything, like,
yeah,
multiple songs were,
yeah, within, yeah, the iTunes charts, and
yeah. So the fact that it kind of throws up talent like hers to a national, you know, audience, I think is really good, or to an international audience as well, you know, because as you know, this, our national final reaches people, you know, much further than just the four corners of this island.
Mm. Definitely. And you talk about Connolly, you talk about Wild Youth. Of course, when we spoke to you last year, you mentioned that there was two fast-tracked acts going through. One of them was Wild Youth, and we know their story. We've heard about it before. But the other one, we're guessing, was Public Image Limited, John Lydon.
Yes, yeah.
Can you talk us through that process and how that came to fruition?
Well, do you know what? It goes back a few years, because somebody suggested it to me about 4 or 5 years ago, I think, maybe even longer, maybe 6 or 7 years ago. And it was a guy in Galway who had written a song for Wild Youth, for Public Image Limited, and rang me up and said, look, if I got these people interested, would you be interested? And I thought, well, there's no way this band would be interested anyway. And at the time, I thought the song wasn't that good, to be perfectly honest. And so that was that. That's where we left it back then. And then this year he rang me up again and said, look, I've got I've been talking to them again, and they have their own song and they would like to give it a go. And what would you think? And I said, look, well, it all depends on the song, and it all depends on lots of different things, because I'm not sure Public Image with their normal sort of stuff would have worked particularly well. So So anyway, so they approached me and they said, look, yeah, they would be interested in taking part and they would be interested in coming all the way from Los Angeles, which is where John Lydon lives. And but they had a kind of a different song, and they had a song with a very particular message. And I thought that was what really kind of caught my attention. And I said, well, you know, if they're serious about it, we will put them straight into the Eurosong final, you know, because look, at the end of the day, the guy is a world icon, you know, whether you like it or not, or whether you like the music or not, the Sex Pistols were a global phenomenon. Mm. And he was prepared to come over. He's, you know, his parents were Irish. He had a genuine connection with this country. And I felt that he was sincere about having a go at it. You know, I thought if he was just here to kind of subvert the competition or to take the piss or whatever, like, you know, there would be no point because he's just taken up a place. But to me, he seemed sincere, and the message from the song was very deeply felt, I think. And despite what you thought of it, and I know you loved it, Louise, didn't you?
And I think it was him, but it's not just me.
but they were the reasons why I said, look, this is worth putting him into the Eurosong final. And also, do you know what? There's an element of wanting to make a stir as well. And I knew by putting him into the Eurosong final, we would get a lot of attention for the final. I didn't think the song was ever going to win. I thought it might do, you know, I thought it might do well, but I didn't think it was ever going to win the final necessarily, because I just don't think there are enough public image fans in, you know, who are going to, you know, pick up the phone and vote for it. So I thought if it was going to win, it was going to do so on its own merit. It was going to kind of reach across the fandom and across kind of generations and stuff. So, I mean, I thought it was well worth doing. And do you know what? He came over and he was, despite his fearsome reputation from the past, he was actually a lovely guy to deal with, and was very grateful for the opportunity. And even when he didn't get through, was still very appreciative of everything that we did, and was very appreciative of the support that he got while he was here. And, you know, the opportunity obviously to talk about his wife, Nora, who's since died, unfortunately. And also to raise the awareness about Alzheimer's, which was one of the key things that he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you mentioned there absolutely a great message behind the song. And I think there was a lot of opinions about the song. And really, at the end of the day, not everybody feels the same way about music. So it's sort of irrelevant in a sense to talk about the quality of the song or what others perceive the quality of the song to be.
People talking about the quality of what they thought the quality of the song.
And a lot of people like the song too. Yeah, and like that's fair enough. I'm really interested in, you know, there was a big storm at the time about the comments made on RT Radio 1 from the lead singer, John Lydon. When he was asked, does he watch Eurovision? He said, no, never. It's absolutely awful. The songs, the whole thing of it is disgusting, really, to me. I'm a songwriter. I perform live. And these shows, they just come off dreadfully phony to me. So I suppose as someone who's, you know, curating the brand of Eurovision within RTE and, you know, kind of encouraging people to approach it, how did that fare for you? Was that a difficulty in terms of organising Eurosong, or did it create a nice kind of media buzz around it?
No, I mean, I would prefer him to say, I love the competition. I've always, you know, enjoyed watching it or whatever. But look, his whole thing is, his whole persona is based on a kind of contrariness. Mm. And his whole persona is based on this kind of, anti-establishment kind of view of the world and you know, what he does and all that kind of stuff. I thought he says things just for the sake of creating controversy. Mm. And I think that's exactly what he was doing. I don't think because afterwards he told me, he says, you know, he loved watching Johnny Logan win. He said, if you've had Johnny Logan, now hopefully it's going to be John Lydon. He said, you know, he knew people who, like, he knew the history of the competition. Mm. He knew the previous winners who had taken part. Now, obviously not so much recently. I mean, he was delving into his past, you know, but he certainly was very aware of the competition and all that kind of stuff, you know. So I think that was really coming from a place of mischief as opposed to deeply felt, you know, contempt for the competition and loathing for it and everything about it. Because otherwise, why would he be there, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms then, of course, of that particular act being fast-tracked, we'll say, as an established act to the final. And it did ultimately not matter in that case because they weren't near contention for winning Eurosong. But it did come down to Connolly and Wild Youth really in those final votes. And there was a lot of discussion online about, is it fair for artists who are new to the scene to go up against a band with a huge following? Because I know a big thing we saw was, you know, people reporting that there was Wild Youth fans voting 200, 300 times. And was that skewing the vote? And if again we had a national selection, do you think there should be some kind of voting limit for the public?
Well, I don't know is the answer to that. But I will say, look, that's life. Do you know what I mean? Like, life is competition, and the music industry is a competition. You know, it's a competitive business, and you know, you can't ban acts because they're well known and they might have a bigger following than other acts that you end up in a national final. So it's always going to be a certain amount of a disparity between, you know, more established acts and acts who are brand new on the scene. So
do you not think they have that extra advantage though in certain in all areas, because in a sense the public vote, more of the public know them to start with, but then even when you consider the Irish jury, like if there's radio DJs or music producers, they may have come across them in the past. Do you know what I mean? Do you think
you're saying our juries are biased?
No, but I mean, I do think you have to consider the fact that if an act is already in somebody's head, they kind of, there's a familiarity, and it means you're more likely.
But if you extrapolate from that to the Eurovision itself, then I mean, that's just a bigger version of that, you know. But so then, you can say, well, it's unfair now that people have got much higher profiles in Eurovision than our act, you know, so should they be handicapped in some way?
With the variety more countries voting though, like in Ireland, I think.
But as well with Ireland, like we spoke about last year, there is a sense of a GAA community vote win with these people as well. And on top of Wild Youth being known on the radio stations, of course, their connections as well. We saw the likes of Lewis Capaldi tweeting on Instagram to vote in the UK, so...
Now you're starting to sound like Billy McGuinness giving it out about Niall Horan.
I'm not going to call Michael an odious little man now, so we can step back from that.
Niall Horan was tweeting.
We can make this very short interview if that's the case. You know? No, I get the point. I get the point. But at the same time, we had two juries and a public vote. And one of the reasons I brought in the international jury was to kind of mitigate against that parish vote, which you talk about. And it is a real issue, because if you just have a public vote, you know, Dustin's a classic example. People can get behind an act and, you know, make it win despite the fact that it's not necessarily the best act that we could send to Eurovision. You know, the person who came second to Dustin will tell you that as well. Like, you know, that it was kind of, you know, particularly hard.
It popped into our heads, I suppose, and from conversations with others, because in Eurovision you have a maximum of 20 votes you can cast in the televote, and then in other national selections there's variations depending
on
the
country. It's like a 5 limit on an app or anything like that.
It's, to be honest, it's a wider thing than me. I don't know if I would be able to insist that there was a cap on the amount of votes that people... I don't think there is on Dancing with the Stars. I don't think there is on, you know, whatever other, you know, the Late Late Show competition or whatever. You know, there isn't a limit on the amount you can enter that I'm aware of. But yeah, I mean, look, I'll make a note of it. I have a notebook here. I'll write down the suggestions, and yeah, I'll certainly consider that for next year.
Well, moving on to Eurovision itself, of course, Wild Youth went and won Eurosong and represented us in Liverpool. Another non-qualification, 12th in the semi-final, 10 points, one qualification in 10 years. Thoughts?
You make it sound very bad.
Well, Michael, would say it is very bad.
It is bad.
Yeah, look, I'm not going to disagree with that, of course. Yeah, but at the same, look, you know, I tell people, look, we select the songs, four out of those six songs, two of them are fast-tracked, as you mentioned. The other four were sent out to a listening panel of about 40 people. And they came back, you know, and I'm not 40 randomers. They were fans, you know, they were people in the music business. They were people who work in radio and television and all that kind of stuff. A very broad spectrum of people. And they came back with their top tens. And what I did was I collated all those top tens. I didn't even vote myself in it. And the top four, drew a line under the top four. And I said, these are the four that are going to be in the national final. So that's how we selected the songs. I didn't write the songs. I didn't sing the songs. I didn't go out and...
Who would you have voted for if you could vote?
That wouldn't be fair for me to say that.
I have to ask.
Because they are all winners in my eyes.
Diplomatic answer.
I couldn't say. Look, the result is the result.
Yeah,
and
of course.
That's what we went to Liverpool with. And... You know, look, I feel like a broken record sometimes every year because I say, look, we gave it our all. The guys did their best, you know, and it is true every year. And, you know, the kind of the effort that goes into, you know, making an act like that happen. Are, you know, they were all obviously they're already an established act in their own right. But to take their thing and to translate it to a Eurovision stage takes a lot of work and a lot of effort and a lot of time. And it is, you know, terribly disappointing when they don't progress to the next level, you know. And, you know, look, there are reasons, you know, over the years I could say, look, we could have had a better song in certain, cases. Mm. We could have had a better vocalist in certain cases. Absolutely. We could have had, you know, a better staging of our act. All of those things are true, and you know, but every year it's like it's not my vision. Like, I don't tell people what to do. I didn't tell Wild Youth what to do. All I can do is say to them, look, this is my experience, this is my advice, this is what I think, you know, is going to give you the best shot at qualification and doing well. And after that, I mean, I've got to accept they're the people standing up on stage. They're the people going out there and putting themselves out there. I can't insist they do. I can't insist they wear something. I can't insist they sing in a certain way. I can't insist that they, you know, swing from whatever, a trapeze when they don't want to, you know. It's I have to just go with them, trust their own, you know, instincts for what, you know, for how they see themselves as. I give them the benefit of my advice and, you know, obviously I do as the head of delegation and, you know, the custodian of, you know, RTE's, the funds that RTE trust me with and their public funds, that we have to spend them correctly and we have to spend them accountably and all that kind of stuff. And so that's essentially my job. I mean, it might be better and, you know, we've done it and it might be easier if I was to get some unknown artist and say, right, this is the outfit you're wearing. This is, you know, the song you're singing. This is the stage you're going to stand on. And if you don't like it, I'll get someone else. You know, but I wouldn't do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. You know, one qualification in 10 years, there's a stat out there. We're ranked 36th out of 39 countries, only above Latvia, North Macedonia and Bosnia. Bosnia only competed in 2016. So,
well, you know, there's any way of looking at statistics, as you know, right?
But when you put it on the paper, it is, you know, we haven't qualified. We're in the bottom four of countries performing the last 10 years. I know there's so much behind the scenes.
Yeah, but if you go
12
years, you've got two other qualifications in there. Or if you go 15 years, you might get more qualifications, you know. So,
but it's still not fantastic either.
Look, I'm not justifying it. Of course, I'm saying that with kind of tongue in cheek.
Yeah, of course.
It's not a great record. Absolutely. But... you know, and all I can do is, you know, work with the songs that we get, work with the acts to put themselves forward, try and go around and convince people who wouldn't normally think of getting involved to get involved. And after that, then we try and do our best with the act to make it actually, you know, competitive.
I suppose it's worth saying as well, just for any new listeners who didn't hear our chat with you last year, Michael, that episode is quite informative, where we kind of dug deeper on your team. Well, really, the Lone Ranger team you have going on, and sort of the background in RTE. And we asked you about what you do when you return in May and so on. So there's a lot more detail within that episode if anybody is wondering. But moving on from that, and I suppose I was just thinking there as you were talking and about the stats and how that could change when you move the parameters of the year. I think for a lot of particularly younger fans will say, because, you know, in their recent memory for most of their lifetime, particularly we'll say teenagers, they've never seen a qualification, or they've seen one qualification, and you know, the good old days is something in the past. There's an interesting account on Instagram, Ireland's Eurosong Future. I don't know if you've seen it going around.
Possibly.
It's a chap called Ryan, and he's doing a lot of work kind of collating data and thoughts from fans and kind of rallying interest in Ireland's future, I suppose, in Eurovision. And he took a poll looking into the insight into the feeling of Eurovision fans. So 13% of fans believe RTE can deliver Eurovision success. 9 in 10 believe The Late Late Show is unsuited to Eurosong. And 5% are proud of Ireland's national selection compared to other countries. So obviously this is all people's opinions and their responses. But is that something you're feeling from people's response anyway?
Listen, when you're I've been saying it. Funny enough, I saw something recently. It came up on my YouTube thing, which was looking at Eurovision stuff, that where I'd been speaking to somebody, I think it was Lisbon, which is what, 2018, right? And I said, I was saying then in that interview, I wish we could do a standalone national final, right? So here we are, 5, going on 6 years later. And, you know, are we any closer? I'm not sure. I thought we were. I thought we were closer until, you know, shit happened over the summer. And unfortunately, that's coloured everything going on in RTE.
And in fairness,
you did
say it to us last year that there was a potential chance for it in 2024, but... As you said, you know, the summer months has revealed a lot going on within RTE.
Well,
it
unfortunately has, you know, like, you know, if, as they say in politics, events happen and you can't foresee them and you've just got to roll with them. And unfortunately, events like that has pulled the rug under the financial stability of the organisation. So I thought...
Has that impacted your vision for next year, do you think, in RTE?
At the moment, no, because the budget, as far as I know, like, look, ask me again in 3 months' time. I have no idea. I mean, at the moment, we've entered, we're taking part, we're planning to have a national final of some sort. We'll go into the Late Late Show now in a minute. But after that, yeah, I mean, like, who knows? You know, who knows? Mm. I don't know. I'm hopeful that, funnily enough, that out of the crisis that engulfed the station in the last 2 or 3 months, that there will be a genuine willingness on behalf of politicians to finally put the organisation on a proper and sound financial footing. But it doesn't seem to have happened yet, and but it might. Like, it has to, otherwise the thing is just going to carry on indefinitely as a kind of basket case organisation that stumbles from financial crisis to financial crisis. You know, that's unfortunately.
So you're
reality.
Kind of trying to steer it now through with sort of a storm going on around you in a sense.
Well, I mean, let's just say there's not a lot of surplus funds around for discretionary spending. In fact, I think Kevin Backer said there is no discretionary spending allowed anymore, you know. So that the priorities in RTE are A, to keep the lights on, B, to keep news and current affairs on the, you know, on the go. Entertainment obviously is important, you know, drama is important, lots of things are important. But when there's less finances floating around, you know, in entertainment, there's priorities are like the Late Late Show and you know, big autumn, like our, you know, January winter series like Dancing with the Stars and things like that. And kind of one off events tend to get the acts because they're not very, I suppose they're not particularly seen as particularly cost effective, put it that way, you know.
Want to support us? You can support us and contribute to us on Buy Me a Coffee. Just go into our link tree on any of our socials to find out more.
There is, I've noticed myself, there seems to be every year a lot of new shows emerging, particularly game shows I've noticed over the last years. Ireland's Smartest, we have The Money Shot on recently. In my opinion, I don't feel like they're longevity projects. A lot of the time they're cancelled after one season.
Yeah, but you get 8 or 10 episodes out of them, you know, so they block record them during the summer and they're very effective use of studio time, and they're primetime slots, like the one, the Money List, which is going out on Sundays at the moment, is 8 or 10 series, or, you know, 8 or 10 programs in the series. and also so it's seen as a more higher priority project than a one-off show, which, you know, costs a lot of money and, you know, from an advertising point of view, doesn't really generate an awful lot of, it doesn't cover its own, you know, costs.
But then when you're maybe in an isolated way of looking at it, but when you're looking at a franchise like Eurovision, you know, is there not that added kind of extra element to it when it's doing these one-off specials, you know, like the Rose of Tralee, I know you two episodes now, but, you know, those kind of one-off special events where you build a brand within a brand within the country.
Yeah, I mean, look, these are all arguments I've been making. And the one thing about the Eurovision and, you know, funny enough, to a certain extent about the Rose of Tralee, there's a huge youth audience there that we generally don't reach on RT1 television. And so it's worthwhile doing something that engages that audience because, you know, if we just keep appealing to people who are over 65 or 70, whatever, you know, we're not going to be around in 10 years or 20 years, whatever. So, so yes, the audience is one I think that we should be certainly paying more attention to and spending more money on. When there is more money, these things tend to move up the ladder a bit. You know, when there's no money, they don't, because I said they're one-off kind of projects. The Rose of Tralee is slightly different in that it's been going for like 70 years and we've been covering it for 60 of those 70 years, whatever. So, so
you're
nobody
60 plus.
Nobody wants to cancel the Rose of Tralee, trust me.
Nobody wants to cancel Eurovision.
There's a lot of people in Kerry that might get very angry if we decided not to do the Rose of Tralee.
Well, was there ever any chance of us withdrawing from Eurovision 2024, do you think?
I haven't heard talk of it, and I don't think there is, to be perfectly honest. I think we only ever withdrew once, actually, which was sometime in the 80s. Obviously before my time in RTE, but and I can't remember the reason. I presume it was financial.
I think it was a strike or something to do with RTE or something like that.
There you go. Well, yeah. You can't rule out a strike in 2024. So, you know, but I wouldn't think that it's on the cards, to be honest, no.
You talked about politicians there, and more specifically, we know the Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, is a very big Eurovision fan.
We've met him out in chat to him a few times.
Yeah. He was in Liverpool, actually.
Yeah, he was in Turin as well. And he was speaking on Tonight's Show after we didn't qualify, and he was calling for a national song contest. There was an interesting Irish Times article that was published, I don't know if you saw it, where it was revealed that he met with RTÉ board members and the new director general, and it was mentioned briefly, but GAA coverage was mentioned, and also Eurovision when it comes to RTÉ. What are your thoughts on that?
Listen, if Leo's a fan and he can get us the money for a proper national final, I'm all for it. He doesn't seem to have been too quick to cough up the finances required to keep RTÉ on an even keel at the moment, so, you know, I don't know. I think he said also that it's not his place to tell RTÉ what to do.
True, he did say that as well.
So, or how to spend the money. But look, I know Kevin Backhurst is a fan of Eurovision as well, and I spoke to him before the kind of crisis kicked off in at the beginning of June, and you know, I spoke to him about the certainly my wish to have a national final and that kind of stuff, and he was very agreeable to it, and he said he's a big fan of it, and I think it was in his long term plans, or certainly it was one of his things he said that we should be doing in the future. So that's all very encouraging,
but not new.
No, unfortunately. Well, yeah, but again, see, it's down to the priorities then. Mm-hmm. You know, in an organisation as wide and diverse as RTÉ, with a lot of things, you know, there's a lot of genres there and a lot of things that need to be kept going. And, you know, I won't go through the arguments again, but other things tend to take priorities, like, you know, over things than a one-off national final, which costs a lot of money to stage, you know, and you only get one night out of it. If you can, you know, drag it out over 6 or 8 weeks, it becomes more cost effective, you know, but so that was certainly in my pitch, that we would have a national final that would last over a number of weeks, that it wouldn't just be a one-off final, that we would do something like other countries do.
And one thing I know we're particularly interested in, and I know it's something you've spoken about in the past that you have sort of pushed or asked about. One of our Instagram followers, Kira, has asked, are there plans to improve RTE social media for ESC 24, like Dancing with the Stars, which has a podcast dedicated to it, etc.?
Would you like to do a podcast? You're a song podcast?
Well, we're happy to cover because that's what we're doing.
Yeah, well, I suppose aboard.
We nearly see a gap that it's like there's all of this content that kind of isn't used. And you're talking about youth audiences. I wonder, do others in RTE kind of see the potential?
Or realise the potential.
Like that could be tapped into with all of this free content that youth audiences would love to see on TikTok,
absolutely.
Instagram,
look,
all that.
Yeah, and the thing about a big organisation is that there's departments for everything, as you know, right? So there is a department that looks after our social media output. They took the view that we don't need a dedicated Eurovision social media channel, whatever, Instagram, Twitter or whatever, X or whatever we call it. And, you know, that's their prerogative because they're the people that are paid to look after that. So I can't go rogue and suddenly do my own one, you know. So I personally speaking, I think we should have a dedicated social media channel or channels to kind of service the Eurovision fans and people who are interested, and you know, that would give sort of added information or, you know, value around the Eurosong that we're doing. It's a matter of people power and, you know, resources and allocating people and all that kind of stuff, you know. So it's like, you know, you said at the start, you're looking at the team of the Eurovision team here. Yeah. Like, it's just me. So I do, I just told you before we started, I'm doing a New Year's Eve show in 2 weeks' time with an orchestra and a huge, you know, cast of performers and participants and all that kind of stuff. That's basically occupied my time since the Rose of Tralee stopped, you know, which was at the end of August. So we've obviously opened the Eurosong, the entries for Eurosong. I haven't had a chance to listen to any of those songs, really, to be perfectly honest, and I won't until this thing is over. So that gives me November then to start organising that. I'm also doing, there's a live New Year's Eve show, which I'm responsible for as well on New Year's Eve, which is a concert in Dublin Castle. So that comes up as well. On top of the other stuff I get asked to do, you know, so I'm also being asked to do some stuff to do with the toy show and different stuff like that. So it's not as if I just get a clear run to think about this and to plan it out and to say, right, this is what we need and this is what we need to do on that day and this is what we need to do that day. It's, you know, in reality, my time for looking at Eurosong starts in, you know, January 1st, really, you know, and probably a little time. I might get a little time in December I'll have to get a time in December to organise the acts, you know, because we have to give them a decent amount of time as well, you know. So it is, it's, you know.
And I imagine even if you didn't have all of that long list of other things that, you know, running social medias would probably still wouldn't be the best use of your time with meetings and such. I just find it curious that, like, maybe those teams or departments don't see, like, someone having a login and posting like a tweet a week or like something.
Because then you look at, you know, when you come to the announcements, like, we had no prior notice this year to the songs being released on the Ryan Tuberty Show on the Monday. This year we've had one article on the RTÉ website about submissions being open, nothing about extensions being, you know, the extension to the deadline.
It's not for the want of asking. Let me put it that way, right?
Yeah.
So also, remember, this is our interest. You know what I mean? So it's not everybody's interest. Like, in the same way that people might give out, there's not enough information on the social media channels about sport or about our rugby team or about, you know, the Dublin GAA team or the Kerry GAA team or whatever. So people have different interests. We're very wrapped up in this particular one. And, you know, it's great. And it's probably, you know, of all the interests, I think it's probably the best one. But at the same time, it's not everybody's cup of tea either in RTE, and they don't see the value necessarily that that we might, or other people
I suppose
might.
Fans look to the BBC and the French broadcaster and see that they have
BBC
done,
with the budget of £2 billion.
I know.
Pounds
a San Marino,
year.
The Luxembourg.
San Marino, San Marino spends more money on Eurovision than we do, multiples of what we spend on Eurovision.
But it doesn't cost money for RTE to set up a Eurovision account. So I just don't know why.
Well, I've told you, it's just that the people who are doing the
I know it's not you.
Are stretched doing a lot of other things. And
I know.
Probably think, see, this is not a great, you know, it only happens once a year. So why would
But then does it go back then to kind of going around in a circle of trying all these little things where there's big issues with Eurovision and the perception in the country, but then getting the little things right when it comes to the publicity side of things, those little things could make a huge difference of building the foundations to success at Eurovision.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, my priority is to get the big thing right, which is get the right acts in our Eurosong and get the right act to qualify for the Eurovision, because that's the big thing, because that's the ultimate goal, is that we get the right act to the Eurovision. The stuff that happens around it after that is, you know, of varying degrees of importance in terms of its relevance to that particular project. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I know it services the fans, and I know the fans are very keen to know about this, that and the other and all the rest of it. But my priority is getting the right act, making sure that that act is supported and, given everything that they need to go out and perform on a stage the size of the Eurovision. Whether somebody tweets about, what outfit they're wearing or blah blah blah, it's probably not up there in terms of my priority when I'm coming to trying to get somebody to a big stage.
I just feel it would be
if I had more people, that would absolutely
just you had this base, like, and even say, like, extending the submissions, like, even for artists, just to kind of have a base to go to. That's also what I'm thinking, even more so than fans, you know. It's just an interesting topic of
this
conversation.
About that, right? I mean, this is a small country. I think any artist who knows or is involved in the music business in any serious or meaningful way knows that this thing is going on, right? Mm. They know it happens every year. It's not a surprise to them, you know. I mean, if you stop any artist in the street, proper artist, and ask them, like, do they know the Eurovision, you know, happens every year? Mm. They'll tell you they do. So it's not, and all the music industry people know it when the deadline is, because I've been talking to them, right? So it's not a case, I think, that there's a bunch of, you know, people out there or a huge amount of uninformed artists that just don't know and would get involved if they did know the deadline is next week, whatever. Because even if somebody comes to me a week after the deadline and they said, look, you know, I didn't realise it was last Friday, whatever, you know, I'm flexible enough to say, you know, okay, we'll accept the entry if it is genuine, you know, if it's a genuine effort and if it's genuine.
Good song as well.
Good song, yeah, absolutely.
You mentioned big acts there. There was a tweet put out a few weeks ago, CMAT, I'm sure you know her. Mm. She put out a tweet that interests a lot of fans. She said, I would love to do Eurovision, but to be honest right now, I don't like the way that Ireland structures, funds, controls the Eurosong competition and would absolutely need full creative control. Not looking like any of that will happen anytime soon, but hopefully in the future.
Look, I'm more than happy to have a chat with CMAT. I think she's one of the most exciting artists I think we've produced in the last
number
of years.
Why do you think she's saying that, though? Like,
I don't know. Yeah. See, we'd have to get her in. See that empty mic there? Why don't we get her in and have a chat with her? Because I don't know what she's talking about. I don't know who she's been talking to. I mean, I don't know what act that I've been involved with in the last 10 years that I've exerted creative control over, because I don't. I try and, you know, facilitate them to, you know, project themselves in the best possible way and the way that they want to project themselves. So so you can ask anybody in the last, you know, whatever, 10 years, have I, you know, taken their act and ruined it by making them do stuff that they didn't want to do? I think you'll be hard-pressed to find somebody who'll say that.
Speaking of that...
I don't know what she's talking about. Like, you know, I would be delighted to talk to her. I think she's, you know, she'd say she's a great artist and she would be great at Eurovision. But I don't know where she's coming from on that, to be honest.
But speaking of that, the artists in the last 10 years and tweets and that, I was very confused, and I don't know if you were as well, when Ryan O'Shaughnessy tweeted early in the year something about exploding cake.
Yeah, I don't know what he was talking about as well. And in fact, I rang him and I spoke to him after that and I said, what were you talking about? You know, and excuse me. And
in fairness, you did say it wasn't your idea; it was a creative director. Yeah. But it's still,
at the time, there was a creative director. Ryan wanted to be the creative director of his own thing, but I had suggested maybe he might like to work with a creative director. So they had a conversation, and so I wasn't party to it, but they had a conversation. And I think what happened, and subsequently talking to Ryan, I said, you know, in any creative process, right? So if you're anything, could be a program, you know, could be a musical, whatever it is, making a video, whatever, music video. You throw out all sorts of crazy ideas at the start. You know what I mean? Like, that's just part of the creative process. You throw out everything conceivable type of thing onto the table so you can dismiss them. And I suspect strongly that that's what it was. It was something that was just thrown out at the very, very start of a creative process and is there to be dismissed, you know? That's what happens. And anybody who's involved in the creative process, you know what you do is you throw all the crazy ideas out, and then somewhere among them, there's a germ of something that you might go, hang on a second, that's a really good idea, you know?
Mm.
So we're going to get five people at the end of leashes and put them in a crate. So that's the way the creative process works. So it wasn't as if anybody seriously suggested that we're going to get a big cake and Ryan, we're going to force Ryan to emerge from this cake on stage. And he knows that. And I think he was, you know, being, you know, I think he was just saying that for effect, as opposed to it wasn't something that he genuinely believes we were trying to make him do or anybody was trying to make him do.
Yeah. He also said that in his opinion that we need to have Irish songwriting camps with the intention of getting a brilliant song. There was an Irish songwriting camp floating around last year.
Yeah.
Which we never really heard tell
of.
Use
the Valley or something along the
line. Yeah. And I went down and I spoke to those people down there in Wicklow. This year they did it again this year. I just didn't have time to go down and talk to them. It's run by a guy called Ben Pine, and you know, hats off to him. He's doing a great job getting people from all over, you know, Europe, I think, at this stage to attend this week-long session down there. And it's an intensive songwriting thing, and they come up with songs, and the songs that they entered went into the process last year. And I think this year they're widening their net. I think they're going to enter a lot more Eurosong or, you know, Eurovision processes around Europe. Those songwriting camps, I know Ryan O'Shaughnessy was talking about running one. They're all, I mean, I would encourage those. I think they're great. I think, you know, a lot of decent songs have come from them in other countries.
Mm.
And it's something that can only help the, you know, the sort of the quality of entry that we get every year. So good luck to them. I don't have a budget to give them money.
Mm.
I don't have the time to organise them myself. And even if I did, I'm not sure I would want to organise them myself, because then am I tied into taking a song that has come from a very small group of people when really we should be listening to a wider range of music? That would be my view. But I'm happy to listen to any song that comes from a camp, wherever in this country, or even songwriting camps that involve people in, you know, the Netherlands or wherever they do these things. You know, I don't think we should just kind of tie ourselves into endorsing one particular camp, you know.
Love what you hear? Don't forget to leave a review and subscribe to us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts so you don't miss any of our future episodes.
And just a note of curiosity for me, just as, you know, you're someone who has an insight to our submissions, and we hear about it a lot that there's these songs in Europe entered into Denmark, Germany, Switzerland, just chucked around the place. Do some of the songs we receive just come in year after year? Are you thinking, I heard this 6 years ago, this song, you're sending it again?
Yeah, I had a quick look through some of the entries today, and I saw people enter the same songs every year. Oh, every year. And
not getting the hint.
And also, despite the fact that I say to them, you know, I try and limit them to one song per composer, they still send me 12 songs that they've written.
And you said it to us last year. You had the likes of Ariana Grande songs being submitted as well, and Oasis.
I had another song this year as well. Somebody sent me, I can't remember what it was now. I have it on my laptop. Anyway, but somebody else sent me some other well-known song. God. You know.
Original content, please. Thank you very much.
Well, that's important. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
not released until September and all of those rules.
Yeah.
Speaking of Eurovision 2024 now, submissions, of course, are open. Like we said, they're extended. And by the time you're listening to this, it'll probably be closed. But Michael, you did say that you're flexible if the song's good and the artist is good to get them.
Not rigorous about this. I mean, obviously I am about the rules and stuff, but in terms of songs and stuff, it's not a hard and fast deadline, but I have to have a deadline because I have to stop it somewhere,
I know you were saying that you probably won't be thinking about this until, you know, later in the year or even early next year, but what's the kind of vague plan for 2024? You mentioned earlier a national final is on the cards. Late Late Show again or something
Look,
different?
Who knows? The Late Late Show has taken a kind of a twist in the last 6 months as well. It's not the same show maybe that it was before. Different presenter, different interests. I think the dream of having a standalone national final is probably parked for the moment because of everything that's happened. So I think if we're going to have a national final, I think it will be on the Late Late Show. You know, I hate to break it to you, but it will be on the Late Late Show. But at the same time, all I'll say to you is the Late Late Show is only a block of airtime. Do you know what I mean? It's a block of airtime presented by somebody. As is the Melody Festival, as is the Melody Grand Prix, as is blah, blah, blah. It is in a smaller studio, absolutely, because that's just what we've got. You know, unfortunately, I wish it was bigger. I wish we could make it bigger. I wish we could put more money into it. But that's what we got to work with. So, you know, we just have to look at ways of making it, you know, the best possible show we can and making it look... I have ideas about making it look different this year. I don't know if everybody will go on.
Expand on that a bit more?
Not really, because it was only something that occurred to me the other day as I was thinking about something else.
In what sense? In terms of branding or in terms of the set? Where it's set, like, is there potential of moving it outside of the studios, but within the Late Late brand, so to say?
Well, at the moment, it's unlikely that we're going to get a budget, because once you move it outside of RTE, the cost goes through the roof,
course,
right?
Yeah.
So it's unlikely that it will be outside RTE. It'll have to be in Studio 4, because that's the biggest studio we have. But at the same time, do we need people sitting in bleachers? Can we look at some other way of doing it? Whereby you might make it look more like an event, where you might make it look more like a gig as opposed to a television studio, if you know what I mean.
Okay.
Yeah.
But these are just off the top of my head
thoughts.
I haven't spoken to a designer. I haven't spoken to anybody in the Late Late Show about it. They may tell me no. And, you know, that's their show. So what can I do?
There certainly feels like there's going to be something different with, like you said, the rebrand within the Late Late, new presenter, Patrick Hilty, shorter time as well. It's not as long.
Well,
I mean, that's
shown
anymore.
It can be flexible, you know. I mean, it'll have to be a longer show because it just takes more time when we do a Eurosong than they currently allocate to the Late Late Show. But I think Patrick will bring something different to it. And we'll see what we can do. Any ideas, write them on a piece of paper, send them to me. I'll certainly look at them.
I did prefer it this year, you know.
Well, we said on the podcast, we felt that there was a major improvement from
really
last year.
Whoever did the
postcards,
right?
We loved those.
Yeah.
You know, there was improvements.
There was a guy called Emmett did the postcards. And
get him back. He was great.
he did a great job, actually, in fairness to him. And the graphics, I'm not sure who did the graphics, but I think
Connolly's just looked stunning, I thought.
This year felt as if each performance matched the song, whereas it wasn't these Shutterstock backgrounds that, you know, each graphic felt that it was made to fit for the song and the artist, which I think really stood testament. You said, Lou, like Connolly's performance was probably your favourite Euro song performance.
That was my
favorite. It was just beautifully shot and everything like
really
that.
Good. Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Those little things can go so far.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of those are driven by the artists themselves as well, you know, because they have ideas about how they want to present themselves. You know, K Money and ND said that they came up with, look, we want to start off wearing raincoats and have umbrellas and stuff like this, you know. So we said, great, you know, and if we're going to do that, we might look at doing something in silhouette with you. And then, you know, they wanted to throw off the coats and stuff. And that all worked very well, you know. And they're an act to watch in the future as well.
Oh,
I hope they would enter again at some point.
Absolutely.
In terms of song submissions then, how many have we received so far?
Well, as of
any big
today,
names you can throw out there? Any little exclusive?
Well, some acts have been very open.
Erica Cody, of course, is one that we've heard a lot about.
She's been very open about wanting to take part. And yeah, she's certainly a very interesting act. Yeah.
Crewcon is another one we've seen in the mix.
Crewcon, they were very vocal about taking part last year. They didn't quite make the Eurosong final. They'd be an interesting act, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Lyra said on an Instagram Live that she was interested in writing the song, so...
Look forward to Lyra's submission in due course.
You're giving nothing away, Michael.
Well, it would be unfair, to be honest, to start naming people.
Yeah. Because, yes, of course.
You know, I don't know if that, like, they enter, some of them, and, you know, they might enter in sort of confidence and if they get to the final, fantastic. But if they don't, they mightn't, like, you know.
Any fast-tracked entries this time around? Is that system returning, or are we going to see
there
the
might
back
be.
End?
There might be.
We need to insert, like, a dun-dun-dun.
Yeah, dun-dun-dun music here.
Well, I wouldn't rule anything out, put it that way, you know. So,
Are they living in Ireland, or are they in Los Angeles, or anything like that? Or
Well, this is an exclusive. I haven't been talking to anybody in Los Angeles lately.
Okay.
Right,
okay.
So, there you go.
Johnny Lydon is not coming back.
Have you had many of those one-on-one conversations, sort of the salesman, would you come to Eurovision? Have you had a chance to have many of those?
Yeah, I have. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. But at the same time, I don't want people to think I am now nominating them as our entrance. Do you know what I mean?
So it's probably hard to get them over the line then, in a way.
Well, I'm going to them and saying, look, we're going to have a competition. Would you like to take part? And some of them go, well, maybe. But if you're going to just nominate me, you know, to take part or select me internally, that, you know, absolutely. But they might be a little more reticent about the competitive element of the Eurosong. But now I can point out and say, listen, John Lydon took part, you know, Public Image took part, Wild Youth took part, you know, loads of people. Nicky Byrne took part, you know, as a songwriter. Danny from the Coronas took part as a songwriter. So, you know, and it didn't destroy Nicky Byrne's career.
No.
And, you know, it doesn't seem to have hampered John Lydon in his, you know, career either. So that all helps me, I think.
Would you ever consider, if you just got the most amazing song, saying I'm scrapping the national final, would you ever consider that and go internally?
I think that, well, I think we're probably too far down. Well, no, are we too far down the process now to suddenly go to say this is the song?
I mean, Slovenia did it last year with Joker 8. They had intended to do a selection, and then when they got them, they actually went with it. So I wonder what would we ever get the song that would allow us to do that, I suppose.
What act would you say we should put in? If you could pick any act.
We're getting asked the questions.
Any act. Which,
yeah.
Well, Lyra is the common answer for a lot of Eurovision
fans. Yeah, I think
fans.
Even like someone like, I'm not too sure if you heard of like Lucy Blue. She's not the U2 level, but she's kind of a few steps below, but she's still killing it on streaming sites. She's still doing fantastic things online. Approaching those sort of artists, I think, would be
I love
beneficial.
Inhaler as well. They're really different.
Yeah.
The Scratch, a lot of those acts.
Yeah, I mean, I think, some of those people are in those acts are in a different place. Do you know what I mean? Like, so Inhaler are in a different place to Eurovision. Like, that's not, it's not even on there. We're not even on the same plane, if you know what I mean.
Mm.
They're following this kind of rock trajectory, which doesn't include obviously our universe in Eurovision. So I don't think they would do it. In fact, I'm pretty sure they wouldn't. You know, but there are other people, like, you know, you mentioned people online, like, they're like, that's a very important place now, I think, for artists, much more so than television or even radio, is TikTok and, you know, Instagram to a lesser extent, I suppose. And Facebook is pretty much over, I would think. But
Keane D. Crowe, TikTok.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. Like, the likes that he was discovering, TikTok them, and all them.
Ali Sherlock are people like these, you know, who are
Sykes Skelly as well.
Is she old enough now, Ali Sherlock? She is. So,
Yeah.
Interesting.
You might see her on a New Year's Eve program soon.
Oh,
okay.
There we go.
Very good.
But exactly, it's like the social media thing is huge now, and approaching those not discovered acts, but on the verge of being discovered, and trying to entice them. The likes of Connolly, you know, like you said, no one really had heard of Connolly beforehand, and look at her now, she's such a fan base just from competing on Eurosong.
Yeah, so like, and this is the other thing, I think, that people don't necessarily, at least the message is hard to get out, is that, see, I don't believe there's any downside to taking part, to be perfectly honest, because, you know, the people that, excuse me, the people that like you are still going to like you. The people that hate you, you know, are always going to hate you. It doesn't matter what you do. And, you know, you've only got fans to win. And that's what I always say to anybody thinking of taking part. I said, look, this is, I don't believe there's a downside to it. Even if you don't get past the Eurosong, for someone like Connolly, she was unknown before then. Now she's got a fan base she never had, you know, and that's down to her competing in Eurosong. So likewise with Wild Youth. I mean, they haven't stopped touring since they, you know, they left Liverpool back in May, and they've been their best mates at Joker 8, and they're going around, you know, Europe and the UK and whatever, supporting them. So like, it's done nothing but good for their brand. So I would definitely, you know, that's my elevator pitch to any artist thinking of taking part.
Well, we're looking forward to finding out what the
what's in store next year. I think to finish things up, we kind of have a few quick fire questions from our listeners who submitted on Instagram.
When are you resigning? When is that plan?
Well, I'll kick things off, I guess.
You get a good insight to your inbox, Michael, we'll say that
one. One person, Declan McCartan, said, do you understand why there is criticism and do you think it is fair?
Do I understand what? Of course I understand. Like 10 years without a qualification. Of course I understand. You know, with one qualification, whatever. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Of course I understand that. Do I think it's fair? Sometimes I think they think I'm much more responsible for things that I'm possibly not responsible for, and or that I have no control over, you know. And I suppose that part of it, you know, I think is a little unfair. Also, some of the mad conspiracy theories. Like I saw somebody online saying that that I forced Wild Youth to sing the song We Are One, that they, you know, that I had the song myself or whatever, and that I made them sing it.
Connor said on our podcast really clearly that like he was gung-ho for that song, from that his producer wanted some other song.
So blame Connor, not Michael here. Blame anyone.
But it's mad what people think. So anyway, so I don't tell people how to sing their songs.
Understanding the process more in the last years, we see wild things online and we say, where did they get that idea from? That's not how it works.
Listen, I mean, online is a, you know, is a hotbed of conspiracy nuts.
Yeah, exactly.
So so I take anything I see there with a pinch of salt.
Yeah.
The criticism is unfair. No, I think if there's genuine criticism, and I'll take it on board and I will try and change it if I can, you know. I mean, I do take the criticism about the Eurosong not being to the standard that we would like it. Absolutely. I think that's a wider issue than just me. Do you know what I mean? So, and that has, for all the reasons that we've discussed, is something I would hope that we could fix in the future. I would have hoped we would have had it fixed by now, but, you know, that's life. And, but other stuff, I mean, I don't know. If anybody has any, you know, genuine complaints are, you know, things that they think I could personally do better, or, you know, that I don't do, or, you know, do I, like, if I don't, like, I feel that more so than my predecessors as heads of delegation, I do genuinely listen to the fans. You know, I go out and I talk to, you know, people. I talk to you and I talk to other people as well. And I reply to pretty much every email I get that somebody sends me. And if I don't, it's only because I've missed it or it's gone into my junk folder or whatever. But I do genuinely try to reply to everybody. So, but I'm open to suggestions. I'm open to heartfelt criticism, not just common abuse, which, you know, is also a feature
Obviously
of
not
my...
acceptable, yeah.
But, you know...
There's a constructive way, way
being
of
helpful,
it, you know, helpful.
And,
it's
and
like,
so, I mean, if you were sitting in my seat, right... What would be the first thing you would do? This is, you know, so if you were head of delegation tomorrow, what would be the first thing you would do?
That's a hard thing.
Go through all your emails.
Listen, I can send you those now. You don't have to be head of delegation. But what would you do?
It's a big question.
I'd arrange a meeting or something with
who?
the higher up execs and say, listen,
I meet those people all
Eurovision,
the time.
This is the best thing ever. We want to win. Number eight, Sweden are matching us.
I've had that meeting. So what's next then?
Well, I missed that meeting, so I need another one.
You want another one? Okay. And you think they've changed their view since the previous meeting?
I honestly would just go back to finding the song instead of all this kerfuffle about the late Euro song.
Is there a better way? Well, then let me put it this way. Is there a better way, an internal national final,
so to say, of that you invite people in, like the panels you're discussing, invite them in, getting to perform live in front of you, because studio can make you sound amazing. I'm not a good singer. I could sound like Mariah Carey if I had a few tools on Audacity or whatever. But, you know, make them sing in front of a few 100 people, Eurovision fans, executives, radio producers, all that. Have them perform and have an internal selection, but a competition internally, so to say.
So keep it off the late, late show.
Yeah, just focus on the song instead of...
I suppose you're never going to make everyone happy.
No, but, you know. And it feels but a result a little, could go
it might seem
so
to
much.
People it's a little secretive, you know, we're having it behind closed doors and no one's, you know, you're being brought into a...
But I remember talking to people in work, I was like, did you watch Euros? Like, a lot of people don't even know how our act is selected nowadays until they look back or even if they look it up.
Yeah, but then, you know, when you think about remember, that. Most people don't really care either, you know, to be honest. It's fans that care how these things work, you know.
But different most things people, work for different countries, I suppose.
Yeah, and you know, because Melody Festival is a bigger show than the Eurovision in Sweden, you know, people don't even care what happens to the song after it wins Melody Festival, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. That's a bigger event than the Eurovision. More people watch the final of Melody Festival than watch the Eurovision in Sweden. Mm. So a lot of people don't care. A lot of people just only think of the Eurovision when they see Marty Whelan doing a promo for it the week before. And they go, oh, that's on next week. You know, who's our act again? That's what they, you know, that's what their view is. So it would be helpful if we could change that and if people could be much more invested in the whole journey of, you know, Eurosong to Eurovision, and we could get even simple things like radio play people behind us.
That's
even
the difficulty,
Even getting our own radio stations to play the song. You know, try and get that kind of thing going,
which is why we need the song, because in my lifetime I most remember excitement around Mickey Joe Hart and Jedward because people loved the songs.
So it all goes back to the song and the act, right?
Yeah,
that is the big thing that we need to get right. The song and the act. You can have all, you can have the best social media campaign in the world, but if your song's rubbish, it doesn't mean anything.
We've seen
you
that
need,
we have.
So you need the song and the act. So that's where my primary focus is on. What's the best song, what's the best act we can possibly get. And there are three things in that. One is obviously is staging. Second is the ability to sing, which is even more important now than it ever was. Because if you can't sing at the top level, it's over, you know, in the first 5 seconds if people find out you can't sing. So so there are two things. I've forgotten what the third thing was. Anyway.
Well, we've picked your brains so much
jumpsuit.
For one day.
Oh, no, don't mention the goals, jumpsuit.
No.
Does it give you hope, though, when you look at the ratings? You know, most watched grand final since 2018. Eurosong ratings were up as well.
The Eurosong, yeah. I mean,
there is interest in Ireland.
Absolutely. You know? I think it's got a resurgence since Duncan Lawrence probably started it, and then Maneskin certainly took it to a next level. And that became, like, that crossed over because people went... They heard the song and they didn't realise it was the song that won Eurovision, you know, so...
Even the likes of Rosaline, who then didn't win.
Yeah,
went
20
really
Rosaline is exactly... Yeah. And if you ask, if you stop, you know, 100 people in the street, 99 won't know where that was in the Eurovision. They'll just think that was the TikTok song. So so it does give me... Yeah, it does give me hope. And I also think, look, I mean, despite the statistics, I think we're just one... You know, song and an act away from hosting a final here at some point.
Ooh. Hosting a final, wow. Not even a qualification.
It is, because
straight
these
to the...
things come out of the blue. Do you know what I mean? This could be the year. You know, this we never know. I haven't listened to
that's
the song.
The next thing that stresses me. How would Dublin host it?
I love the way you say Dublin. You'll annoy some fans there by saying Dublin.
I tell you one thing, it would be a challenge to host the Eurovision.
The arena would be a big issue, I imagine.
It would be a huge challenge to try and host the Eurovision here.
Challenge you like, though, I say.
Well, it would be if I could do one thing before I, you know, shuffle off this mortal coil. I hope to give an even bigger financial headache to RTE than they currently have.
It should probably break even somewhere.
It doesn't break even. That's a big problem. No, I mean, I was at this head of delegation meeting recently in Berlin, and one of the issues was about the financing, the financial stability of the competition and the license fee that individual countries pay towards it, which is, you know, a substantial part of, about a third of my budget is the fee that goes to the...
And ours has increased. It's 20% up from 2019, I believe, as well. So it's an increase in fees.
Inflation has, you know, has diminished that, that completely, right? But a third of the budget goes to the EBU just to host the thing, right? So that's straight out off the top of your budget. And the EBU are saying, we're coming back and we're going to take more. We're going to ask you for more, by the way, in the future, because it isn't financially sustainable at the moment. So these are the things that, you know, that I also have to consider in the real world of Eurovision, you know.
God. So many puzzle pieces to try and juggle together. And
there's a lot going on in it. There's more than people think, you know, and because it only happens once a year, nobody really thinks about it until it happens, you know, that week or the week after.
Apart from the likes of ourselves.
Apart from the likes of ourselves.
I think a nice question to end things would be is, if you could get one act to take part and represent Ireland, who would it be? Who would be at top of your list?
I don't know if there's one act, because I think lots of acts could represent us really well. Mm. I think it's the song. The song, like, we need a killer song. And, you know, where that comes from, I've no idea. Will I know it when I hear it? I don't know, actually, to be honest, you know, because sometimes songs just come out of nowhere. And even in Eurovision, songs come out of nowhere. And you think, how is this now the favourite when this wasn't, you know? So if there's one act that could represent us, I don't know. Who would you think? Who would you like?
I don't think they'd ever do it, but it would be iconic if you two ever went.
But would they do that well? Because
obviously it depends on the song.
Remember, the profile of the audience is quite young. So here's four men in their 60s coming out, singing a song, you know, a U2 song. Do you think that's gonna, do you think they'd qualify?
If it's the right U2 song.
Do you think?
Yeah, it has to.
Like, oh, some classics. And obviously, the Cranberries are no more, but the likes of Zombie having a moment with the Rugby World Cup and everything. Mm-hmm. Something really haunting. I'd love a song like that.
Yeah, but where's the next Cranberries? Do you know what I mean?
I know, that's
what we're looking for here. We're not looking for the people that have people that have already conquered the world.
Yeah, it's more teams I'm thinking of, I suppose.
Yeah.
As opposed to one act.
But those performers, you know, they're out there, but they're few and far between. Mm-hmm. You know, they are not as, you know, everyone says, oh, it's a wonderful country and everybody
needle
can perform
and
everybody's, you know, we've got such great tradition of music and all the rest of it. That's true, but the amount of people that can actually perform on a stage that size is very small.
Mm. Well, until next year, 2024, Michael, thank you very, very much for joining us again.
Quite all right. Yeah, anytime.
Giving us your time.
Really, no, and listen, I'd say I do appreciate the fans and I do listen to suggestions and I do, you know, reasonable suggestions, except the one about resigning, because I will when the time is right, but not at the moment.
Fair enough. Well, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be chatting again. And take care. Good luck with all.
Thanks very much.
Well, there you have it. Our interview with Michael Keeley. Breathe. Inhale, exhale. Firstly, before we discuss everything, thank you so much again to Michael for joining us on the podcast once again. He's very open always to communicating with us and interacting with fans via whatever means, once it's fair and constructive.
Helpful to the
situation. So again, thank you so much to Michael for joining us in Dublin City Centre for that. And of course, again, to everyone at the podcast studios for accommodating us once again. Lou, what did you think of that? It's a lot to take in. But,
it was intense this time around.
It was.
Well, you know, it's always interesting to chat to Michael and it's always great to have the opportunity to speak with him. So as you mentioned, we're really appreciative of that. I did find it like intense, you know, we were really kind of picking apart things. We were really querying, I suppose, questions
that we had, but also that a lot of our followers and listeners had. To conclude, Connor, I'm just curious, and I know a lot of the listeners probably have their own thoughts and opinions. What would be your ideal outcome for what we do from January 2024? What would you like to see Ireland doing?
For me, I think this whole faffing about with the national final is a waste of time, particularly if he, like you said, if he's only looking at it from January. Like, that is not an adequate amount of time to plan for a national final if you are planning for the first week of February. Mm-hmm. And even then, really March, like, that is not enough time at all to give artists time for preparation, everything like that. So I would go internal and just select the best song that we have.
I've always said that.
Yeah.
I've always said the faffing around in January.
Especially if you're looking at the songs, you're thinking, you know, nothing really stands out. If you're listening to all the submissions and that's how he is feeling, then go with the best one that you have. You know, just choose the artist. Focus on that one act for the months you have. You know, it's a lot easier to communicate with one act directly from, you know, let's say December or November, December, rather than trying to get six acts, you know, ready for performances, blah, 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 all that. Like, that is just so much stress in such a short amount of time. It's not worth it at all.
Yeah. So, for all the reasons you just mentioned, I've always said internal selection. Mm-hmm. I don't like the faffing in January. I've always said that. And I remain true to that. And I think just try and choose the best package, really. That's all there is to it. But yeah, there's obviously always going to be a variety of opinions on that. And then also, you know, each year there's different variables and things to consider. But yeah, interesting to digest that together, Connor, and just see where our heads are at, I guess. Enjoyable episode, mm-hmm. informative episode. Hopefully there'll be more conversations to come around the Irish delegation. We do have something really interesting coming your way, hopefully in a few weeks. So do keep your eyes.
We'll let you breathe for a few weeks
for that, because that is going to be quite interesting too, I think. And yeah, once again, thank you to Michael Keely for giving us his time and his efforts, as always, very appreciated. He did make a point of saying to us both during and after the recording also that he's very open to suggestions from all Eurovision fans, Irish Eurovision fans, granted it's constructive and helpful and so on.
Yeah.
So do keep that in mind if you have any good ideas up your sleeve or any thoughts. And interesting, actually, one other small thing, I know we could discuss this all day. Really interesting, he made the point that he would hold out if the right song came in slightly after the deadline.
Yeah, yeah. That's a positive way of looking at it, in a way.
Well, I think he's right. I mean, like, don't, like, shoot yourself in the foot. Like, if an amazing song comes in a couple of weeks later, like...
But he also did say that he's probably not going to start listening to the songs or have the time, really, until December. Mm. And it's like, Jesus, like, that is just not...
I'm sure he has a team helping him on that.
I'm sure he does, but, you know, still, it's not great either, you know. Like, when you, like, you know, he says there's teams across Europe that have people working on this all year. Like, Orty, you need to give him help.
What he's working with,
an extra person, you know, to help, you know, a head delegation role, you know, split it in half. Good.
Between a rock and a hard place, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. But like you said, we could talk about this for days and days and days. But
take a breather, guys.
Yeah, you breathe. Take a moment. We want to hear from you, though. We want to know what you guys thought of that. What are your opinions on what you've just listened to? Any suggestions, like we were saying, let us know what you think. And on the next episode, we'll discuss your thoughts and let other viewers in on your thoughts as well. So do get them into us. There are so many ways to contact us if you would like. We love a good email. You can email us, airvisionpodcast@gmail.com. We're on all the social media sites, Instagram @airvisionpodcast. On Twitter, we are @airvisionpod. And also on TikTok. Our TikTok is kicking it off at the moment. Loads
Alex
of videos.
And Michal.
Thank you to Alex and Michal. They are killing it. Give us a follow @airvisionpodcast on that as well. And of course, if you like what you heard today, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify by hitting the little star button. It would really, really help us and help other Eurovision fans to find us if they have not already. And do subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Like we said, we have a big one coming up again in a few weeks' time. And I'm sure more will be coming over the Eurovision season. Whew. But from myself and Lou, I guess all we got to say is... Slán go fóill.
In Paris, on the shores of the